Hello, everyone. Today we have an exciting episode. We're going to talk about this concept of what if your 18-year-old or what if an 18-year-old found the show, listened to the show, and then actually took action on that. What would be the results? Today, title of the episode, The 18-Year-Old Who Actually Listened. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is Choose FI.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, very excited to dive into this week's episode. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. Yeah, this should be fantastic. And like you said, the 18-year-old who actually listened. So that was actually the first line from an email that Zach sent to me. So obviously every week I send out my Fi-Weekly and I get these amazing responses, but this one just leaped off the page. And the 18-year-old who actually listened, it reminded me of Harry Potter, the boy who lived. There was something about it that just stuck out to me. And Zach said, I've been wanting to write this email for quite some time now, but today seems like the right time. A little background on me is that I started listening to your show 4 years ago when I was 18, and I've been addicted to the information and the community ever since. I've used a wide variety of the strategies you guys have talked about and wanted to share my experience and say thank you for changing the entire course of my life. And then Zach proceeded to tell all of these incredible things that he's done over the last 4 years, and that's why we brought him on. So Zach, with that, welcome to Choose FI.
Thank you, guys. Really excited to be here. Like I said, I've been listening to you guys for 4 years now, so it's surreal being here, being able to talk to you guys, and I'm just so pumped, so excited.
All right. Well, we are just as excited to have this conversation, and I think one of the things that's so interesting is I remember in the somewhat earlier days of the show, we were trying to find individuals at increasingly younger ages that had made unorthodox choices and gotten the results that you would expect from that. And I think we accomplished that goal over the intervening 4 years, but now to have this kind of, Brad always describes it as this virtuous loop, this virtuous circle or cycle, where someone now listens to that information and then repeats that process and gets results. I think that's what makes this so compelling, because I think when you identify those stories, those characteristics, it makes it easier for other people to latch on and say, wow, this is a tried and true process. So we're really, really excited to have this conversation. I guess let's start with, what were you looking for? I mean, you found this community, you know, back in, I guess, 2017, 2018, somewhere in that range. What were you looking for when you found the community, and what was the initial appeal from the outside?
Well, I had always had just a general interest in like finance and investing. I hadn't really done much research into it, but I was going to college and I was like making a good amount of money. And suddenly I had like $4,000 in my bank account. And I had like my monthly expenses were like maybe like $500, like that was it. And so I had this huge extra sum of money and I wanted to do something with it. So I just started like researching investment podcasts and stuff like that to listen to. And that's when I eventually found you guys just on Spotify. And I started listening to a few of the episodes and it really resonated with me, not just on a, you know, go trade daily stocks, but it was more of a, it's the long haul kind of approach. And that's what I was looking for. And that's what you guys talk about a lot. And it's really what hooked me in was the ability to set myself up, make the choices right now that will have the long-term impact. And it's, you know, it's less risky than going on the daily stocks and trying to trade stuff there.
Yeah, that long-term mindset. I think that's certainly what appeals to me about financial independence and just about kind of success in life. Most of these things are, they're long-term games. But as an 18-year-old, it's easy to get caught up in the YOLO type world. What do you think it was that clicked with you?
I think the biggest thing that clicked with me was compound interest. Like you go into the calculators, you put in the numbers, and then you put in, you know, for me, I've got 40 plus years till I retire. And if you see, if you put $100, you know, a month in and you see $1 million plus at the age of 65, I mean, that blew my mind. And it's like, okay, you know, $1 million is cool, but you know, I'm 18 at the time, and I'm like, what can I do to, you know, make this number even bigger? How do I even make this realistic? So that was the big thing. I'm like, there's so much possibility out there, and I just wanted to, I guess, get my piece of the pie, you know, make sure that I'm going to do what I need to do and set myself up for success in the future. Like I said, compound interest, seeing that big number on the screen got me really excited.
Taking the long view is such like a key life skill. And the fact that you can extend past, like, when am I going to get that first raise? When am I going to get the second, you know, like, when am I going to be able to afford the car? Like all these types of things, to be able to have kind of this, where do I want to be? And how are the decisions that I'm making now going to align with where I want to be at, you know, at certain age points? That's really, really fantastic. You found this community when you were in college. Walk us through like the fact that you were in college and you had some discretionary income. Was this income just coming from the balance between what you were loaned and, you know, how much your college actually cost? Let's walk us through that college choice since you were already in college when you found the community.
So my college experience was probably a bit different than most people's. So my high school offered a program, it was called College Credit Plus, but in reality, it's just dual enrollment between the high school and the local community college. And so thank you to my parents and my older sister for getting into it and showing me the way that, hey, this is a really good way to do it. And I encourage anyone who's a parent or if you're in high school, it's a great way to get out of high school because you only have to go to class like 2 days a week. That was fantastic. That was the best part. Nice. You only had to go to class for an hour and a half twice a week and then you were done. I had so much free time. But while I was in high school, they paid for everything, your books, your tuition, like anything school related, they paid for. So I finished high school with the full year of college already done. Then after that, I went and I just kept going to the community college because I was already there. And there's so many scholarships and grants out there that you can get to pay for it. There's one specifically that I use called the Pell Grant, which completely covered the cost of my tuition and helped pay for my books. So I think I might have spent like maybe $300 or $400 for my first 2 years of school. That was it. And then my junior year, I went to Cleveland State, which is the local state school up near us. And I had to pay for that out of pocket with the help of some scholarships. And that's where I think I had like $4,000 or $5,000 saved up, and that went to that junior year of school. But then my senior year was kind of where the magic happened and where I kind of started looking at everything. Because what ended up happening was that I enlisted in the Army National Guard, and they have a really, really cool program where if you enlist, they'll help pay for your school. And in my case, they paid for the entirety. Like all my tuition was completely covered by them. So all the money that I had been saving up for school, I had, like I said, like $4,000 I had saved up. I could use it for whatever I wanted now. I could do anything I wanted with it because the Army was going to pay for it. And so that last year of school was completely covered by the Army. So I think my entire like out-of-pocket expense for school might have been like $4,000, something like that. And I finished with zero debt, like absolutely nothing.
Okay, that is incredible. I have about 10 different questions. So let's really slow down because there's a lot of good stuff here. So that dual enrollment. So you were senior, it looks like your junior and senior years, you actually, instead of going to your physical high school, you went to the local community college. Is that right?
Yeah. So the junior year, I took like two classes at the high school. And then my senior year, I didn't go to the high school at all. They just let me do full enrollment at the community college. I mean, I was basically a full-time student at college during my senior year of high school.
Wow. And I think you wrote in the email, all your books were paid for. So, I mean, that was just literally a free year of community college, completely free.
Yeah. I mean, there was no cost to it. I mean, it was one of the things that the school put on like a whole presentation saying, hey, come sign up for this because it helps out the school and because it reduces the class size, but it also, it's more opportunity for the students.
That's really cool. So was there an application process or was it something that they accepted everybody? How did that work?
I mean, you had to fill out a form saying, hey, I want to go do this. But in reality, I don't think that there was anything that said, hey, you have to meet this GPA requirement. I mean, if you signed up for it, you could go do it. And it wasn't just like, I mean, you can go to the community college and take anything. It didn't matter what it was, as long as, you know, you completed all the boxes for, you know, you had 4 years of English. So if you took like an English class at the college, it counted for your college requirements and your high school requirements.
Okay. So one question I've always wanted to ask about community college, and I just never have, but just popped into my head now, is like the level of rigor. Because again, you're 22. This is in recent, fresh memory. When you were a senior in high school, how did the community college level class compare to that comparable class that you would have taken? Obviously, it's a counterfactual. You can't prove it out. But like, but roughly, was it similar, do you think? Was it dramatically more difficult? How did you acclimate to the community college?
I honestly don't think it would have been any more difficult than what I was doing in regular high school. I think it's a little bit more, I guess, it's college level thinking and more like college level essays. So maybe I had to write more. But if you're planning to go to college anyways, you're still going to have to go through those classes. But it was a lot more of just like professional writing and making sure that like for English class, you know, it was kind of that stuff. But it also let me experiment with classes that the high school didn't offer. Like I can't go to the high school and go take like, I took like an Excel accounting class. You know, it was specific for Excel and it was all accounting related things. And like, you can't do that at the high school. They just don't offer it. So that was great having, you know, it might not have been more difficult, but it had more options too.
So a point of clarification, and this may be obvious, but like you were not in high school, but 1 or 2 hours a week because you were at effectively the community college, the remaining period of time. You were taking the same classes you would have taken in high school, but you're doing it over at the community college and getting dual credit for both. Is that an accurate representation?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, this is cool. And I think, you know, really, it would be interesting to come up with some state-by-state resources because I think people have no idea. Like I was just looking right now because we're in Virginia at our state credentialing body, so vccs.edu, and they have a whole page dedicated to these dual enrollment contracts. And it, I mean, it's literally probably 50 or 60 community colleges that have these dual enrollment agreements in place. And I mean, it can be, I think it's increasingly now here in 2022, at the point of this recording, it is, I think, covering the entire country. So basically your last two, if we're saying the problem is high schools are overcrowded, this is just something that isn't being marketed and you could effectively do your last 2 years of high school plus your first 2 years of college or most of, and the time that you get back, you know, you started this conversation by talking about, you know, the long view, the time that you get back to start working on the next piece, I mean, has a disproportionate impact just because of the nature, again, of compounding. You know, not to belabor this, but I think about the normal path for 20 to 30, you're just paying back your student loans, right? So you get out and then you're just paying back the student loans. So something like this, not only are you starting sooner, but your debt burden is, you know, much closer to zero. So that point at which you can get back to broke is wow.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And I was just on college too. Like I said, like the finance is a big piece of it, but I feel like another big problem for a lot of people my age, and I know, you know, everybody deals with it, is like, what do you really want to do? And I think it's like the ultimate way to dip your foot in the water and experiment with different things with, in reality, no repercussions because the classes are free and you could, you know, do whatever you want to do and try different things. You know, I tried the film class. I tried like a photography class. You know, I tried a bunch of different things and not everything worked out, but it was a really good way to experiment with different things.
And speaking of that, it's funny that you mentioned an Excel accounting class because I have a daughter who's now 14, who's going to high school. And the one thing that I actually want to teach her, I haven't passed this along to her yet, and I'm trying to figure out the best way to do it, but is to learn Excel, Microsoft Excel, at a like world-class level. Because I think that is something that you could basically walk into any company in America and say, here's what I can do and make your entire workforce more efficient and create spreadsheets and databases for you. Like I know at my own accounting company, we hired somebody at $200 an hour to come in and create us this spreadsheet database tax estimated payment calculation thing. It was like the greatest thing ever. And the guy looked like a wizard to us, basically.
Yeah, I think it's amazing that like those kind of courses are out there, like those little niche markets. But they have so much power and influence that you don't even know about. Like you said, you hired a random guy for $200 an hour and you're like, okay, well, what does it take to get into there? You know, how much expertise you need to have? And I guarantee it's not in reality that much. You take a few classes and you can, maybe you're not the best in the world, but maybe you're getting $100 an hour. And I guarantee I would take $100 an hour and be happy with that.
And isn't that the beautiful thing of like the talent stack, right? That we always talk about is, as you said, you don't need to be the best in the world. If you are well above average at a bunch of random different things, like you, Zach, if you took two accounting classes and that Excel accounting class, plus you went to like TikTok and followed Miss Excel or something, who's this amazing content creator. I mean, that in and of itself would put you in the top 5% in the world, if not higher, in terms of being able to walk into an accounting firm and do that. And again, we're just totally making this up because it's my own life. But isn't that cool about that concept of the talent stack?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. And like I said, I think it's a big power out there to have the flexibility to try those different things, especially when you're young. I mean, you have so much opportunity out there. Why not take the time when, you know, you have no responsibilities to go try different things? And I think it's set yourself up for the long term and really make your life better.
Yeah. So, right. You finished high school, quote unquote high school, but got essentially that first year done at the community college. Now, from there, I would think that's an inflection point, right? Like, what do I do from here? Do I go to a regular four-year college? Do I finish out, maybe finish out if that's the term? Do I get an associate's degree at the community college? Like, how did you think through that issue? Because it seems obvious now, like, oh, I'll just go to the community college. I'll get my associate's and all of these steps that in hindsight seem obvious, but it wasn't obvious then, I assume.
Yeah, it takes a lot of, like, I guess, research. And it's not hard research. I think it's just taking the time to sit down and look through the different options. I know a lot of those, it's probably the same schools that do the dual enrollment. They also have programs where if you get an associate's, I got an associate of arts. And when you take that associate's and apply it to the state school, they do a one-for-one credit transfer. Every class that you take at the community college transfers 100%. And it's 20% of the cost of going to the state school. Like, there's no reason to not. The curriculum's the same. The classes are, for the most part, the exact same. You're learning the same material, but it's just a one-for-one transfer when you go there. To me, it was like, I can do the same thing I'm going to do there. It's a less of a drive. And like I said, I think it was $1,000 a semester was the cost for going to community college versus like $5,000+ for the cheapest state school. To me, once I found that out, it was a no-brainer.
I wanted to do some comparison on the analytics. So how old were you when you graduated college with your bachelor's? So first of all, let's just, when you go to community college and get your associates, a lot of four-year schools, as you were just pointing out, will have transfer relationships where you can transfer all or most of those credits in, and then you can just do your last 2 years at a four-year school and you're going to graduate with the bachelor's degree. And that may not be every state across the board, but many of them have guaranteed, specifically what I'm talking about, the guaranteed admissions program, as long as your GPA is over a 3.5. Did your state have something like that in place where you were able to get guaranteed admissions into Cleveland State, in your case, based on your GPA?
I don't know if they had a guaranteed admissions kind of thing. I had to go through like the admissions process.
Okay.
But it was a bit different because it was just like a transfer. And like I said, all the credits transfer. And I know they have a very healthy relationship between like the two schools that I was transferring between. So it was really like, I mean, if you came in, passed your classes and didn't, you know, purposely try and fail, I think it was pretty easy to actually get moved up to the next school.
It's just important to point out that that process is independent from ACT scores and SAT scores, et cetera, especially with the guaranteed admissions program. So I know that in particular, my SAT scores were not quite up to the same bar as Brad's, but I remember not really worrying about it because I was able to get an average of a 3.5, you know, at my junior college for my GPA. And that guaranteed me admission to basically the state college of my choice, whether it be UVA or Virginia Tech, et cetera.
Yeah, I'll say that when I took the ACT, and I think that let me skip like one math class at the community college. But other than that, it was never looked at again. I don't think I would have really needed to take the test other than just to skip that one class. It was irrelevant, I think, in my transfer process.
Yeah. And Jonathan, you point out that guaranteed admissions program. And I think this is important because we are spending a lot of time here on community colleges. But I think this is a really nice option for so many people out there who, if getting a four-year degree is their goal, right? There are many, obviously many millions who are still following that path. Okay, not only can you get your first 2 years for essentially free, right? Very, very little money. But as Zach's saying, if you are finding these programs that the credits transfer over exactly, then you're literally getting 60 credits just transfer over to that four-year degree. And in some cases, like in our state of Virginia, Jonathan, you can get guaranteed admissions to some of the best state schools in the entire country. University of Virginia, William & Mary, et cetera. I mean, these programs exist across the country. This is not just a Virginia thing. This is not just an Ohio thing. To anybody out there who wants either themselves or their kids to follow the college path, there are different ways. That's the beautiful thing. That's what's so cool about Zach's story is you don't just have to, from day one, go to that four-year private school and spend $50,000 a year. There's always options, even down to Zach. Like my next question was, you commuted to your local state school in year three and saved room and board, which for a lot of people across the country, room and board costs more than tuition at a lot of state schools. So, I mean, talk me through even just like that one decision that seems minor, but it's not minor.
I think it's to me, like, I think financially in my brain. And when I look at room and board, and room and board was the same price at my school as tuition, I'm 30 minutes away. I can commute there, and I'm only going there 2 days a week because I could, because you can set your schedule in college. And so I had all my classes set for Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I would drive there 2 days a week. There's no point in paying an extra $10,000 just to be there for the other days of the week. I could just, you know, stay at home and save some money. I had no problem with that.
But I think what you're highlighting there is some of the mentality. And I went ahead and just pulled some statistics so I could drop some accurate numbers on this. The average college graduate from an age perspective is in between 22 to 24 years old. So we could just average that out to 23. And the average income for a first year grad is $56. That was as of 2021. That's the last year that we have that data for. So the first year graduation income, $56,900. And then the average debt burden that the students graduate with at the same time. This has nothing to do with how much was paid. It's just saying the average student loan debt burden that students have, they're graduating with $36,000 in debt. And so that's a 54% debt to income ratio. And that's been trending up over the years. If you were to go back to early 2000s, it was much closer to like 30%, but it continues to go up higher. So it's a 54% debt to income ratio, and you're graduating at the age of 23. I want to do a little compare and contrast because we have two different factors at play here. We have the fact that you preempted the first 2 years of college by doing that while you were still in high school effectively. And then you also have, you made these choices to reduce how much would need to be paid. Could you give us a sense for your age at graduation and again, reiterate how much debt you graduated with?
I finished with my bachelor's degree. I was 20 and I graduated with $0 in debt. It's just a little comparison. I didn't realize the numbers were that, I mean, that severe. I mean, it's crazy to me that 36,000.
I mean, this is keeping in mind all the parents that set aside money in 529s. And, you know, this has nothing to do with how much, I'm sure it's multiples of that. But on top of all of the savings and all the doing the right things, $36,000 in debt that child is carrying, that young adult is carrying into the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years of their life.
Yeah. Like I said, I graduated when I was 20 and my total out-of-pocket expense for college was about $4,000. And that's for a four-year degree.
That's amazing.
Hey, this is Andrew from the Choose FI team. I hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to get right back to it after these quick messages.
So I want to talk about the Army National Guard. So that is a very interesting choice for a lot of people, and it's a very viable choice for a lot of people. And I'm curious, you said, so you enlisted in the National Guard, and one of the perks is paying for school. So year four was completely paid for by the military. But what if, for argument's sake, you joined the National Guard when you were 18? Would the same have held true? Was it only for senior year? Do you recollect how that works?
So there's a lot of different ways to approach the military and school, because you can go like an active duty route and they can pay for your school and they become like an officer and transfer there full time. I mean, you could do a whole episode just on the nuance of the military and education, how it goes together. The way that I approached it was a little weird and not the usual way to do it. So there's a little clause when you enlist in the military. So I'm just enlisted. So like, you know, the bottom of the food chain. I'm just a little specialist, nothing special. But there's a little clause when you enlist in the military that says you have to leave from when you enlist. This is for the National Guard specifically. It's different for active duty. But for the National Guard, you have to enlist and then leave for basic training within 365 days is usually what it says. But the thing is that while you're enlisted in the military, you can apply for then to pay for your entire school. What happened was I enlisted in June. And then I basically had them pay for my entire school year because I was enlisted in the military. And then I left the following May. So I was within the 365 days, but I was enlisted. I just didn't leave for basic training yet. So it's a way to get school paid for before you leave. Because I know it's a lot of people's fears of the military is that I'll be in school, go enlist, go do all the training and everything else like that. Because the training for me was over 6 months. And you come back and it's like, oh, I have to go back to school now. So I did it in kind of a weird way. I was able to enlist, get it paid for, and then leave after.
Was it a happy accident or was there some strategy involved?
It was a mixture of things. So I had always kind of in the back of my mind, I had the thought that I wanted to join the military. It was kind of something that I went back and forth on for a long time. And then eventually I said, I don't want to be 65 years old and regret not doing something. I'd rather be able to say, hey, I did that and it sucked versus being 65 and wondering what if. So that's why it was some nice financial, you know, advantage with that too. But it really was a, like a personal choice because I, as much as I love the military, I think if you're choosing it to pay for college, that's probably not the best choice because the military is a huge commitment in reality. Like I was gone for 6+ months and I didn't see any of my family or friends or anything else like that. So if you're looking for just paying for school, I think there's a lot of options out there. But if you're interested in the military, it's a really powerful tool too.
So I didn't realize when you joined the National Guard that that means like a 6-month all-consuming commitment. Is that the general way the National Guard works?
It's different for every job. So you go through basic training. So for the Army National Guard, we work under the Army. So all of our training is done through the regular big active duty Army. So I went through basic training, which was 2.5 months. And then you go through your technical job training. And that varies wildly. There's some that are like a month long. And then there's the one that I went to, which was over 4 months long. So it kind of depends on the job that you're going to for how long you're going to be away for, I guess.
Okay, that makes sense. And so you joined somewhere, I'm just trying to do the simple math, you joined sometime around when you're 19, maybe early 20, depending on how this worked, and you're 22 now. So are you still part of the National Guard?
Yes. Yeah, so I go and do, we do like the once a month, you go out for, you know, do some training mission, and then usually 2 weeks in the summer that you have to go out and do stuff. But like I said, the military is crazy. It likes to pull you different ways. Like I think the last year, the week before Christmas, I got called out for the COVID relief. So they said, hey, pack your bags for the next 2 months. You're going down to Cincinnati, which is like 4 hours away. So it's usually, you know, it's not a huge commitment, but sometimes it can pull you different ways.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this. So, you know, this is a, you're in the National Guard and there is a commitment that you're obligated to on average right around once a month. But now you're graduating and you're landing your first job and we have kind of like a base. I'm interested in just, you know, how much you were making that first year out of college and what that first career role was.
So right out of college, so I finished my bachelor's degree in May and then 2 weeks later, I left for the military. So technically, my first career was the military for like 6 months of training, stuff like that. But outside of that, my first real career outside of college, I was looking. Basically, I had my technical skills that I learned from the military because I was a helicopter mechanic. So I have a lot of like hands-on experience with mechanical things. Then I also had my 4-year degree and I was kind of balancing which route do I want to go down, work with my hands or kind of, you know, more white collar kind of stuff. And I ended up just like going on Indeed and putting in any job that made over $65,000 a year. And then I just applied to as many of those as I possibly could, even if I didn't fit the criteria.
Jonathan, that sounds like you. That's so amazing.
I was just like, if it makes over 65,000, I'll hit apply. I don't care what it is. And so what ended up happening was, is that I found a job in the fire protection industry. So we did things anywhere from like the fire alarms, you know, like in school, there's a little pull thing on the wall and all the sirens go off and all the kids get out. We worked on those. We worked on the sprinkler systems to put out fires. We did all kinds of things like that. And it was pretty cool because the company that I worked for, and they had a 9-month training program, but the entire 9 months were paid for. So you were on the job learning new skills. And once you got out of the training period with them, I mean, you came out with certifications. Like I have 3 or 4 different certifications that I could take anywhere and, you know, make a good amount of money and starting position for those. Like I said, they range because it was like commission based. So you'd make anywhere between like 65,000 to the guys who've been there for a while can make, you know, up to 6 figures doing it.
Okay. All right. So let's dive in on that just a little bit there. So in terms of our baseline here, all right. So we're outperforming the 56K as of the 2021 data, right? So we're at 65K. The job, I'm really curious about this job though. I know it's not what you're doing right now. And we'll talk about that transition in just a couple minutes, but I wanted to point out that job does not seem like it would need to lean very much on the bachelor's degree that you just got. In fact, it sounds like your application process was more just based on a salary requirement as opposed to like something you actually learned in school. So I'm curious, in your own mind, little reflection here, of all the things that you had done to that point, what made you stand out to choose, you know, you? Was it the bachelor's degree or the helicopter mechanic experience or the Army experience?
Well, that job had zero use for the degree whatsoever. In reality, which I feel like it happens to a lot of people, you go get a degree and then you start a job and it's not relevant at all. And that was the case for me. But it was just, I really enjoyed when I was working on the helicopters, working with my hands, doing mechanical things, getting to fix stuff. And so that's why I applied for that job. And I saw like the long term, you know, $65,000 sounds pretty good to me once you get past the little training period. So that's why I went that route.
Okay. So fire alarm technician. What my curiosity is, and I think this is kind of piggybacking on Jonathan's question, could you theoretically have done that at 18? If you knew then what you know now, could you have just applied for that at 18, got in that 9-month apprenticeship and moved forward? I understand that what you learned in college wasn't necessarily applicable, but was having the degree a check the box for the fire alarm technician, or was it completely and wholly irrelevant?
It was completely and wholly irrelevant. It was not a requirement whatsoever. I think the only requirement for the fire alarm specifically was, I think, that some of the licenses you had to be 21 for, so technically not 18. But like I said, the college experience for that was irrelevant. You could go to, like, you know, a trade school and learn a lot of the same stuff we did, because we did electrical work. We cut and fabricated pipe systems. We did a whole bunch of different kind of things working in commercial and industrial environments, but none of it required any amount of college education.
Yeah, I think one of the things I want to put out there is that, I mean, I just really, this is an indictment of what the current statistics are for new grads. I just want to point out, in your mind, based on what you did then and what we'll talk about in just a second, do you need a college degree to get a job that's making $56,000 or beyond?
No, I don't. I was there. I was there for it. And you really don't. And I think that you've guys talked about the show before, and I'm on the same boat, where there's specific jobs that if you really want to go for it, if you want to be a doctor, you're going to go to school. If you want to be a specific type of engineer, you're probably going to have to go to school. But there's so much opportunity out there. And I think that the trades are, they are paying exponentially high right now. It is crazy how much money the trades are paying and how much talent they're trying to bring in. I mean, if you are any at all mechanically inclined or like working with your hands, look at a trade, because a plumber is going to make 6 figures, like, easily. That's what they're doing right now. They're making so much money.
Yeah, that is amazing. So, right, you can basically come out of high school at 18, do some type of apprenticeship in whatever trade of your choice. And frankly, I didn't know fire alarm technician was one of these trades. So this is expanding my own horizons, and certainly people out there listening, just in terms of, okay, we understand plumber, electrician, contractor, et cetera. But any of these, it just, like I said, it expands the horizon for the whole FI community, for people of, hey, this is another option. So right, that apprenticeship, is it pretty much every trade that you know of that there would be an apprenticeship coming, like, from day one?
I think any company out there at this point, like I said, they're so desperate for employees that they're willing to put you through training programs, or they have training programs in place. And it might be, you know, 9 months might be on the shorter side for what we're doing. But like I said, all of those programs, instead of going to college and you're paying an average of $36,000 of debt coming out, they're paying you the entire time you're learning the skills and the trades and stuff like that. It's so valuable compared to just going to school and kind of figuring out what you want to do there.
Yeah, man, I love this because, right, you talk about like compounding long-term thinking and just putting this all together. Right. Like if you're at 19, or in your case, 20, the old age, the ripe old age of 20, but it could be 19, right? It could be 18, depending on when you finish your apprenticeship. And not only are you not paying for college and spending 3 to 4 more years of your life, but you're earning a significant income, right? So you talk about, I think about, how does money double, right? And you're almost getting an extra doubling of your money after all is said and done, like at the end of your life, when this is kind of convoluted, but this is the way that I think about it. Like, okay, you're starting at 19 or 20 with a zero net worth and earning $65,000. And I want to talk about what you did with that money. But as opposed to somebody like Jonathan, who was still paying out of his student loans, and granted, he was making a lot of money, but he was still paying out of his student loans into his 30s, right? So the amount of opportunity cost there is a literally 10 plus years in the case of the two people that I'm talking to here, which is wild to see side by side.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, the craziest thing about the trades and stuff like that is that it really is a no qualification, like walk in the door with a drive to be there and a drive to learn, and they're going to teach you. Like, you don't have to be, you know, the smart kid in class to go ahead and like build stuff, because I think everyone has their own special talents that they're really good at. And I think, like I said, the trades is another option. Like, I looked for jobs to use my degree for that made, you know, $60,000 to $65,000. But I challenge you, go find an entry-level position that's going to make $65,000 that's not a, like an engineer or
degree.
Like a nurse or like a doctor. You can't find it. I checked. I looked. I'm looking at $45,000, $50,000, and I'm like, really? I know I live in a low-cost living area, but $50,000 is not, like, to me, I think in long-term, that's not a lot of money. So that's why I bumped up to 65 and I hit apply. So I looked for those jobs, but they're just not there.
Yeah, that is wild. All right, Zach. So in this case, you are 20 years old. You're making $65,000 a year. You have $0 in student loan debt. What does one do? And you've been listening to Choose a Vibe for a couple of years at this point, right? So you have a financial background. You understand long-term thinking. You understand financial independence. What does it look like that first month or two when you start making money for the first time, right? When you're making $5,000 a month gross, like, what do you do with that money? What do you think through? How did you allocate where that money went?
Well, I really looked at it more as I like to build the budget. I'm a budgeter. I like to bring out the Excel spreadsheet, build it all out. I got the assets, you know, liabilities, use the accounting terms for it. But I go through and I listed out all of the like required expenses. Like, got to pay the rent, got to pay for the car, got to pay for the insurance, and looked at that. And then after that, I looked at the things that I really wanted to do, you know, and looked at the things that make me happy and make my life more enjoyable. And the things that I love to do, I love to go hiking. I like to go like rock climbing, kayaking, stuff like that. I don't have very expensive habits. They're pretty cheap in reality. And so I looked at it and I said, all right, I've got all of this extra money coming in at the end of the month. You know, let's set myself a lofty goal to just see how much we can save. And I kind of pushed myself a little bit with working on, you know, what's the bare minimum I can get by on. And then another month, I might expand a little bit. All right, let's give myself some more money to play with. And I think that's a constant like balancing act, you know, with trying to balance how much money you're saving to get to your goal. Because the more money you save, the faster you get to, you know, FI. But at the same time, it's trying to find that balance between doing the things that you want to do at the same time. But I mean, a lot of the money, like I maxed out my Roth IRA, like I think 3 years running now. I think I'm coming up on number four. So, I mean, it's just putting investments in like the long-term retirement accounts, stuff like that. And then I overdid it with the Roth. I've maxed it out. So then we moved on to like the stock brokerage account.
This is awesome. I think people really fundamentally don't appreciate the value of being able to get started early. And I just, while you were talking, I was just trying to, you know, run a couple calculations that could kind of point us towards how dramatic this fork in the road really is in terms of, you know, looking at this potential path a little bit differently. And so like you and I are this wonderful study in contrast here where, you know, I had a massive student loan debt burden graduating in my, you know, mid-20s and then paying it off and getting back to broke. So getting back to the point where now everything that I was putting towards student loans could now go towards my investments. And so like, let's just do this like side-by-side case study. Jonathan is getting back to broke at 30 and Zach is starting his career with no debt at 20. And let's just say that maybe if we're investing the same, right? We're both doing $1,500 a month, but I'm starting at 30 because I went for a, you know, 4-year degree bachelor and then 4-year doctorate. And then now on the other side, I'm making, you know, 120, 130, somewhere in that range. But, you know, I've also got to pay off this student loan debt burden. So really I'm able to start aggressively start saving at 30. Let's say we both are just saving, to pick a number, $1,500 a month, all right? $1,500 a month. You're starting at 20. I'm starting at 30. At retirement, 65 for both of us in this case, I'm going to have $3.5 million. You investing the same amount, but you started at 20, are going to have $8 million. $8 million.
That sounds a little bit better than the 3.5. Sorry to say. It's a little different.
Right.
Jonathan is a doctor, though.
Well, I'm a doctor. They're like, no, dude, you're a pharmacist. But no, it says at the front. Yeah, but that's how you spell pharmacist. All right. So now let's just try to tilt it towards you. Let's try to redeem my financial choices. This isn't a career choice. Maybe I love the career. I'm just talking about the financial implications of the choice. All right. So let's say that I was making dramatically more income because of my additional schooling. So in the prior scenario, both individuals, you know, Zach at 20 and Jonathan at 30 were saving $1,500 a month. But in this new altered scenario, because of my additional schooling, which allowed me to unlock a much higher paying job, I'm actually able to save twice what you were able to save. I'm now saving in this new scenario, I'm saving not $1,500 a month, but $3,000 a month. All right. So you started at 20 with your 1500. I started at 30 with my $3,000 a month, both of us save for that duration until we reach 65. So again, as a baseline, your net worth is $8 million, but I'm literally doubling what you're able to save. But when I'm 65, I have just touched $6.8 million. So even though I saved twice as much from 30 to 65, you still have outsaved me. Your net worth is about $1 million more than mine.
It's crazy to like see those numbers, you know, on a page. And I think it goes back to, you know, like my parents, my dad always said, save your money and start investing early. That's it. Because my dad always said, if you save $100 a month and that's it, by the time you turn 65, you'll be a millionaire. Like that's all you have to save. I mean, these are the numbers where you start early. It doesn't have to be that much. I'm saving half the amount that you are, but then I'm still $2 million over where you'd be at. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's the power of starting early.
Yeah. And it's cool that it comes full circle, because the first thing that kind of clued you in to financial independence, as you said, was compound interest and looking at that calculator. So to see this case study that Jonathan set up, this literal horse race between your two lives, it's really interesting. But I do want to, lest anybody out there starting late is having a doom and gloom scenario. In this example, the Jonathan character is still ending up with $6+ million. So let's be clear that this works for anybody, financial independence, but it works a heck of a lot better. And this is what I was kind of stumbling over a couple minutes ago about that extra doubling, right? Like you have an entire decade where at the end, your money will have already started growing and you have an extra decade where, let's say, that last doubling, right? We talk about the rule of 72 to bring you from 4 million to 8 million. You have all those extra years for that to happen. And that's where the magic happens of having just an extra long timeline to invest. It all comes back to that rule of 72 and that concept of compounding.
Yeah. And let's be very clear. The prototype for the other individual that loses this horse race is me. I'm not saying, oh, poor me. I mean, it's
right. You're doing okay.
We're doing okay. It's just fine. I'm just pointing out that as we realize that these concepts work, that they're true, we should get very excited and almost feel an obligation to help our kids realize this sooner. And that's what, you know, Zach's helping us with this by saying, yeah, I did this, you know, see where I am. The other thing that I love about this horse race in terms of making it even more fun is that it assumes everything's static, that you pick one thing and that's just what you do. But in reality, as you add new ideas to the tool chest, you get new inspiration and you're willing to take action, you can change your circumstances and you can increase your income. You can even change careers. And Zach, I think about, you know, both of us in these, as these examples that we used for this, both of us have made decisions to change our careers at various points in time and far beyond, you know, what the traditional path would have allowed for. So I'm curious, you know, my story is pretty well documented, but in your case, you are not a fire alarm technician currently. Is that correct?
That's correct. I have made a pretty big switch in my life. So, I mean, it's a big thanks to you guys and the show you guys have put together. But I was listening to the Anita Smith episode, which I don't know whatever episode that was, but that was an amazing episode. And I have transitioned from fire alarm protection and all that kind of stuff to Salesforce. And as of 2 weeks ago, I landed my first Salesforce job. And I'm super excited. It's going to be a big change for me. But like you said, it's going to increase the amount of money I'm making and give me a lot more flexibility too.
Wow, that is an incredible change. So yeah, that was episode 297 of Chooseify. So if you're listening to this on a podcast player, just go back and find episode 297, or you could go to chooseify.com/297. And yeah, that was an amazing story about Anita. So it was from pandemic layoff to $100,000 a year plus. And I mean, that was a real story of a real listener who also, interestingly enough, responded to my fi-weekly email and said, hey, Brad, this is what's going on in my life. And it's wild that you heard her on the podcast and now you're here telling us your story. So huge, huge congrats. And like, was it a fairly easy transition? Because I mean, that's kind of a big deal, obviously, to change your profession, especially right when you're getting started with your initial profession.
Honestly, it has been one of the scariest points in my life. I'm going to be completely honest. Because what ended up happening is that I was working for the fire alarm company. And as the company has kind of switched how they were like operating the business, and I ended up was working like 60+ hours a week. There's some guys who are working 70+ hours a week, and I was just getting burned out. because we're doing, you know, hard manual labor. I remember that one day I had my first stop at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then I had to drive over an hour away to the next job site. I didn't get home till 12:30 at night.
Wow.
Like, I was out the entire day. I came home, I passed out, and then I had to be up back at the shop again at 6 o'clock in the morning for the next day to start. And it just, like, I was so burned out. And after that, I said, you know what? I've got enough money saved up in an emergency fund, and I see the light that is Salesforce, you know, because looking at the Anita Smith episode and just the community in general, there's so much opportunity out there. So I made the leap. I didn't have a job. I quit my job at the fire alarm company with no job lined up. I just said, I've had enough. I've got some money in the bank. I'm not even certified yet. I've taken the test and I failed it, but I am not certified for like a Salesforce admin position. But I decided that I've had enough at the fire alarm company. So I quit there, had no job lined up, and I just put my head down and put a lot of work in. I got certified. I interviewed with, I mean, probably at least 25 different companies, sent out hundreds of applications, got rejected. I don't know how many times I heard, sorry, we're looking for someone with more experience. But, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, all right, did I make the right decision? You know, is this really going to pay off, or am I going to go find another job? But luckily enough, I think I found a really good company, and I start next Monday. Well, by the time this episode airs, it'll be a few weeks ago. But it's a huge payoff, and I'm super excited for it. But it's definitely been a very scary time in my life with, did I make the right decision? You know, is this going to pay off? Because, you know, I had a good career. I was making good money. But at the end of the day, I was getting burned out. I wasn't able to do the things that I wanted to do. And I think that this path going forward is going to drastically change my life and make it substantially better.
So I just want to clarify this. So in that episode that we did with Anita, we actually talked about a free 5-day challenge where we kind of show you, in that Bradley took the time to point out, here's what you're going to need to do to break into this completely new industry. And it goes through, here's how to log into Trailhead and find out, you know, how this whole thing works and how to get certified. Here's how to find volunteer experience. Here's how to go on and do some personal branding, all these types of things. And over that 5 days, it kind of just shows you, here are the basic steps if you're going to do this. And I think it gives you access to like a group where there's a bunch of people doing something similar where they're breaking into the ecosystem. Are you saying that you took action on that episode and you went through that challenge and you just figured it all out and you were able to land a job?
So I went ahead and I took the 5-day challenge. And I mean, there's a ton of amazing information in there. And looking back now that I have a job, the information's even more amazing. So I can't recommend it enough. Just take the challenge. Like, it doesn't take that much, but you learn a lot about the ecosystem of Salesforce and what it's about. But yeah, I took the 5-day challenge. And from there, there's a whole list of like training modules and stuff like that you have to get through. And you just learn a ton. But I went through all of them. I had to take the tests for the admin. I don't mean to scare anybody, but I had to take it 4 times to pass it. It's not an easy test, but at the same time, there's so many good resources out there, not just resources on the computer, but there's people out there who are more than willing to help. You know, people who are just willing to get in a call saying, hey, I'm having a problem with this certain module. You could talk to a random person on LinkedIn, and I guarantee they'll be like, I would be more than happy to get on there and help talk you through it. I mean, the community is just absolutely amazing, and it's what really helped me get past the challenges of not knowing anything about the industry and then breaking in.
Yeah, Zach, I love this. So right. What's so cool about your story is that at 21, 22 years old, you realize the benefits of FI, right? You realize the benefits of FU money, in essence, right? Of saying, hey, I have an emergency fund saved up and I'm just not happy right now. I'm not happy with being burned out. It doesn't have to be this way. I think that so many of us come to that realization maybe 10 or 20 years after you did. It doesn't have to be this way. There are always options. And again, going back to that concept of the talent stack, you think about, you're 22 years old. You've been in the National Guard. You're in the National Guard. You were a helicopter mechanic, a fire alarm technician, and now a Salesforce administrator. That is a remarkable, remarkable set of skills at the ripe old age of 22. And you have options galore. That's the beautiful part about this.
Yeah, I think it's weird looking back on it because I've just done a lot of different things. But I think like going forward to me, the most important thing to me above all else is time and having the freedom to do the things that you want to do. Like for me, I love hiking. Like this past week, I hiked like 18 miles and it was like 90 degrees out. But I love being out there. And it's just having the freedom to do those kind of things. And I encourage anyone who's not happy in the current position that they're in, you know, if you have an emergency fund saved up, you know, make the leap. It's going to be scary and there's going to be days where it's going to be like, did I make the right decision? But I cannot tell you how much better my life has been since I left the job that was just draining everything from me. I wake up, hated what I was doing, go to bed, wake up, do it again. And the only thing I had to look forward to was the weekends, if I wasn't on call that weekend. And when I'd be on call with the company, doesn't matter what time of day it is, 24/7 we're available, and if something happens, we had to go out. I just encourage people, you only have one life, and make the most of it and make the most of the time and do the things that you find are important.
So I am very intimately familiar with kind of the starting salaries for Salesforce, just kind of being, you know, having this relationship with Bradley and being able to kind of see, you know, people get jobs over the last year or so. And my understanding right now is the starting salary for Salesforce admin is about $74,000. So going back again to this baseline statistic that we have of, you know, a new graduate is coming out and they're making $56,000 a year with a college degree and they have a student loan debt burden of $36,000. Is it safe to assume you're making, you know, $74,000 or more?
I'm right there at like the $70,000 mark, which I'm still super happy with because I went back and checked my W-2 when I was, because the part of last year I was in training and the last little bit of it, I was in the actual full-time making $65,000. But my like gross pay for last year was like $40,000.
Yep.
So I'm like almost doubling what I'll be making from last year. So I'm very excited. I'm very happy for what's happening.
The other thing is like in my profession, when I landed in my profession, like you made over 100, but you've got a 1% raise, you know, each year or every other year. Whereas, you know, as you gain more experience, raises actually come pretty quickly. The other thing I just wanted to point out is, so the $70,000 income, you did it entirely yourself. Using free resources and certificate programs and trainings that you're able to find online. So we talked about the two variables, you know, what the gatekeeper situation is and then how much you're making on their side. The third one that I'll be excited to get your take on as you're moving into this role is what the working conditions are. And I suspect not only is it work from home, are you working from home? Do you know yet? I would imagine that would be something I would want to know before I commit.
It's going to be a dramatic difference. So when I was working at the fire alarm company, we worked anywhere, including like I'd crawl through attics that were 110 degrees. We'd be in the manholes by the side of the road, crawling into like dirty pits. We worked at steel mills. We worked at all kinds of places. My new job, I'll be sitting at home on the computer and I will walk from my bed to my computer and I'll start my day. And I'm excited for that. I'm very excited.
That's awesome, man.
Oh man. Good for you. That's incredible. So, wow, 22 years old. I think you said in your email you have $40,000 saved up between cash and retirement accounts, just a tiny little bit of debt with a car loan, which is perfectly understandable. I mean, you have the world at your fingertips now. It's got to be just so, well, A, I'm really proud of you, right? And I can say that from my vantage point as the old guy on the call here, but I'm just so proud of you that you took action on this. It's a remarkable thing to start listening to this podcast at 18 and 4 years later, just have the world at your fingertips. So a huge congrats, Zach.
Thank you so much. And like I said, I encourage anyone out there who's even thinking about it, just start with anything. It doesn't matter what it is. There's so many avenues to go through and you're going to talk to a bunch of people and they're going to talk about the mathematical best way to start investing or do anything else like that. It doesn't matter. Just start with something. You know, if it's a Roth IRA, look into it, figure out how it works, and just do that. I think that's the number one advice I can give for anybody young. A Roth IRA is perfect. Just figure out how it works and just start. Because guess what? Life's not perfect. And trying to be mathematically perfect in your investments, you're just going to stall forever. Analysis paralysis, you're never going to get anywhere.
This is awesome, man. This is an inspiration to both of us. We have huge smiles on our faces and we love celebrating this win with you. People listening to this, if they want to find out more just generally, I know we didn't really talk about what Salesforce is, but we do have a whole article about it just on the Choosify website. You can go to choosify.com/Salesforce. You can also go listen to Anita's story as well, from pandemic layoff to tech adjacent career. And that's choosify.com/297. So Zach, you know, we're wrapping up this episode here. I'm curious, what's next? You've taken so many huge actions over the last 4 years. Are you done or is there something else on your FI checklist?
There's more to come, more to learn. I'm currently in the process of trying to find a duplex to house hack to hopefully live in one half and then run out the other half to, you know, get my expenses even lower and start getting my feet wet in the real estate market and see how those things go. So that's going to be a whole new exciting world and chapter to get into. But like I said, I'm excited to get into there and, you know, keep investing with everything else. So I'm just excited for the future. That's it.
Oh, that's so cool. And yeah, house hacking from an early age is just an amazing way to cut your biggest life expense down to, if not zero, then pretty darn close to zero. So that's cool. Have you started like putting feelers out? Are you doing research? Like what does it look like in your local area for a duplex?
Well, right now I've been talking to, there's a few friends of mine who do a little bit of real estate. The Bigger Pockets is a great podcast, and I've been putting some feelers out over there and trying to connect with people out there. And I'm going to a real estate meetup tomorrow to hopefully meet some people and, you know, make some good connections and, you know, talk to people who are already in the industry and learn from them. So we're just starting out, but I'm excited.
Well, Zach, this has been an absolute blast. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.
Brad, can you imagine following up with Zach in just a couple of years and seeing where he's going to be?
Oh, man. Yeah, definitely to be continued on that. I'm just really, really excited and just a remarkable amount of action he's taken in just a few short years. So, Zach, again, huge congrats.
All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.